You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, Titusville, and the Beaches, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Vieira, 94.7 FM, and W264AS, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny, real sunny Cocoa, Florida today. We're on we're on AM 1510 on WWBC. We're on FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. We're also heard live on the web all over the world. My goodness, Ellen. I mean all over the world.
Truly.
I keep getting marriage proposals from India.
I know. I keep seeing them.
And my husband said, is he good looking? Is he rich? Go. I'm like, no, I don't think so.
No. It's all a fake. It's all a farce.
It is. So each week, Ellen and I meet here with fabulous friends, people who become friends for life. And some people, we just admire what they do and respect their work. And so we invite people to come here into our studio and we interview people about their books, a nonprofit, a business, maybe someone wants to throw in the hat to run for office, whatever it is, we have people that come here in the studio with Paul, Ellen, and I, and we talk about issues that's going around here in Brevard County as well as around the world. And of course, we do know that freedom of speech comes with a responsibility. We're grateful for that, that I have the opportunity here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends to have such a show. And so today we have a gentleman, Ellen, and you know, he's been a friend of our show for more than 8 years when we started off at the other station, which we shall not say the name right now, because Paul likes us to promote our station, which is WWBC. Right, Paul? All right. So Andres Useshi is a Colombian-American film writer, director, songwriter, educator, and activist, and he's going to be calling in. He published his first cartoon at the age of 11. He has earned so many awards for his films and graphic arts in Colombia. He moved to the United States and he has created an award-winning film, songs, and dance campaign and videos to support causes that he believes supports people here in the United States and around the world. And one such cause actually is immigration reform, which, Ellen, you remember, he sent us that song last time, Marching Into the Light. He also has a Facebook page and a website. And it's, if you Google Marching Into the Light, you can find him.
So I posted his YouTube page, which has all of his music on it and the documentaries and so forth that he's done. So if you go on to Sita Media on our Facebook page, you'll be able to see all of his work.
And one of the great things about Andre as well, he is a script doctor. Did you know there was a script doctor? He teaches in LA, and he also does screenwriting classes. And he's going to be calling in a little bit. He also performed at President Obama's inauguration twice. And so, and in studio we have my really good friend Mark Lyons, who is a nurse, he's an author, he's a friend with a capital F, and he's here to talk about his book. And the book he's going to be talking about a little bit is Only in Florida, Mosquito Lagoon, and the cover is beautiful. I love the cover. So welcome to the show, Mark.
Thank you.
Loosen up. It's going to be a half an hour of fun and unscripted show with Andres first, and then it's going to be Mark's second segment.
And you brought food, right?
Yeah, I hope I brought food.
Rules, always.
And I have my friend Suzanne Childers who's here. And Suzanne, thank you so much. You know, once in a while, great people step into your life and they do something that's so amazing, and you're like, wow. So when I ran for office here in Brevard County as a state representative for District 52, I didn't win. Democrats, of course, in this town, it's a little bit difficult, but we have to try. Suzanne sent me a text the day after the elections and said, I'd like to take you out for lunch and thank you for running. And I was like, wow, that was amazing. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And you're here to join in the conversation and add to a conversation about immigration reform or talk about Mark's books or whatever it is. So welcome.
Thank you.
Do you want to tell our listeners a quick a 30-second blurb about yourself?
Maybe not.
She's shy. We'll get her to chat later, right, Ellen? So, Ellen, we're going to play, I think Andres Osechi's on the phone line, but we want to play his song.
Right. We're only going to play 90 seconds of it because it is quite a little bit of a lengthy song, but it is great. We wanted to make sure that our listeners
and then we're
going to
welcome him to our show. Andres, are you listening?
I'm right here.
So, you know, as a because we're so proud of you and we're so grateful that you take the time to call in from Los Angeles. You're in L.A. today, right?
I'm in California, yes.
Yeah. Well, we're going to play a little bit of your song. Paul has it all keyed and ready to go, and then we'll chat with you a little bit about yourself and what you're working on now.
Sounds good.
All right.
For a promised land, I'm sinking in the raging sea. You raise the beacon in your hand. The flame you keep is guiding me. Tempestos that kiss your shore. We sweat and toil to build a home. They'll send me back into the storm.
Okay, Andres, did you hear that? We heard it, and all four of us in the studio were humming and rocking to the tune. Thank you so much.
Thank you for playing it. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, we're grateful you're calling in. So tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and what bring us up to speed, because I think the last time we spoke, we had such high hopes for DACA. We had such high hopes for immigration reform. We really thought by now we would have all these millions of people out of the shadows and, you know, working and enjoying life and not being so fearful about being deported. So bring us up to date on what you're doing.
Well, something that I've learned over the years is that these causes that we fight for, they're worth fighting for and they're worth fighting a long time to achieve. And it's, you know, reactivists say it's a marathon, it's not a sprint. So every time you fall, you have to get back up and keep trying. And sometimes the obstacles grow higher, harder, more difficult, and we just have to keep pushing because we believe that, you know, the arc bends towards justice, like Martin Luther King said. So, and I think over the years, we've seen progress with voting rights for women and things have improved for, you know, African Americans. Not completely. It's still a struggle. There's still a lot going on, and the same thing for immigrants. I think it's sad that we're at a point where we're very much discriminated against. We have an administration that is clearly xenophobic and Islamophobic and just racist in all their policies and statements. And sadly, we've discovered there's a segment of the population that can be played right into that mindset of hate instead of compassion.
So, Andres, how do we change it? Because, you know, we run into people every day that are really fearful of the color of their skin, their religion, their thoughts, their beliefs. And it's gotten to a point where we want to talk to each other and we want to communicate and reach out on both sides. But people are still, they're scared. And I know as a woman of color and living in the greatest country in the United States, I am grateful that I'm here. But at the same time, I find myself also withdrawing a little bit into things like who I speak to and how I voice my opinion, because frankly, where I came from wasn't that great. I mean, it's a great country, but we have social problems in the island of my birth in Trinidad and Tobago that a lot of people want to flee as well. So we're kind of like, we're kind of caught, like we're in a box at this point. Immigrants want to speak up, but there are a lot of immigrants are saying, I'm going to lay low for a while.
I know. It's in some sense, it's understandable, but in other sense, we have a lot of soul searching to do as well, because we're not always as active as we can be. And I'm not speaking for yourself.
Yes.
Or many of us who are, you know, on the trenches, but a lot of us just, you know, we feel, you know, we're a diverse group among us. So there's many among us who also have a more conservative, even Republican bent, and feel, you know, I got mine. I don't care about the rest of the people. you know, I'm already here. I'm already making money. I don't care about people who are fleeing right now for their lives. And so we have to talk amongst ourselves, and sometimes it's even among our family, and try to help them see that, you know, that we're one human race, and somebody suffering is always going to affect badly upon us, you know.
Right, and I try to, and I also try to say to people, you know, you have to look at the reasons why people flee, you know, things like climate change, violence, wars that create refugees, and of course, so many corrupted governments all over the world, as well as foreign policy. And then people look at you, you know, and they say, oh, and I say, well, no, I mean, we do talk about issues that affect us here in the United States, but these are things that at least here, we have some sort of a system. But in most countries, my gosh, the violence is so severe that families are wiped out by gangs and whatever is happening. We see it all the time when they talk to folks who are fleeing in on the border. So what would you tell people when they say, well, why are they fleeing?
Well, there's a diversity of reasons, because there's people fleeing from many different parts of the world. But a lot of it has to do with violence, sometimes wars that we and now I'm talking as a U.S. citizen, we as the United States have had a role in, like in Nicaragua and Central America, where we propped up tyrants. You know, we've had a role there, and we can't close the doors to people fleeing the violence that resulted from that civil war, or people from in countries like who are fleeing Syria. A lot of Muslim countries that are in wars, and sometimes, you know, what our government has helped people like Assad, or are defending people like Assad currently, who kill their own people. So we have to look at the world and not think of each other as the other, but just be compassionate, and just the golden rule. And I apply this to every major religion in the world, I believe, is saying the same thing: be kind to each other, be compassionate. And we start from that perspective. See how, what would I want others to do if they were in my place, and what would I do if I was in their place? If your family was in the danger of starving, if they were in danger of being killed, wouldn't you look to that beacon of light, of hope that this country used to be? That's the history of this country that I'm alluding to in that song. By the way, The Flame You Keep is talking about the flame of the Statue of Liberty that we seem to be turning our backs on. And this country was built, constructed on that premise of, for example, of religious freedom and offering safe harbor to people who needed it and who helped build this country, all of whom were immigrants and whose descendants sometimes want to forget the fact that they're descendants from immigrants.
But where it seems as though we've lost our way. People forgot that being free, you know, that being kind, being nice, having compassion, these are all things that are free. I mean, all of us, we can be practicing this right here at home, at work, towards other people. But I don't understand where humanity is failing. I mean, we all see what's happening with the Amazon. We see people mocking that young activist, a 16-year-old girl who's fighting for environmental justice. And we see grown men and women on social media slamming a child. It's like, dude, where is your compassion? So the child has autism. and they're saying bad things. And I look at it and I'm like, well, is it coming from the top? Is it coming from people in leadership roles that should be saying, you know, one simple thing, stop it?
Mm-hmm. I think that's one key aspect of it. And it's, you know, one part of that of our work, I think, is talking to each other, staying in touch, helping people from different races, you know, collaborating. Another part of it is, as you say, making sure that we speak out, that we vote, and that we make sure that people know what our leaders stand for and make sure that they stand for what we represent. Do we really want a leader who equates, you know, Nazis with people protesting Nazis? Do we want people who just blankly discriminate an entire race, an entire religion? Is that who we are? Do we want people who would even destroy the environment that their own children and grandchildren are going to grow up in just because, you know, because they might be in the pocket of big oil? Do we want people who care more about the sales of guns than the lives of children in the schools? I mean, who are we? What are we defending here? It doesn't, I mean, even we, without even thinking about party, these are basic human things that seem so clear to me that we should put the lives of children above anything else, and the clean air of our entire planet above anything else. And the science on climate change is conclusive. The only people denying it are pushing it are people who basically are making money out of dirty, you know, fossil fuel and making money out of pollution. So it's very clear. Anybody who takes a little bit of time to research into the 99%.
Well, that's the problem. The people who are the most vocal, Andres, the people who are the most vocal are the ones who don't read. They're the ones that don't reach out. They're the ones that don't pay attention to science. And Susan, do you want to jump in here? Do you have any questions for him? She's just listening. Everybody's shaking their head and just listening.
I'm just listening. I'm fascinated with what you have to say. Of course, totally agree on the humanitarian aspect of what you're talking about, because that's, for me, what resonates with me and all these issues that we're speaking of. We've got to put humanity first, and until we do that, I just feel like, I don't want to say it's a lost cause, but we've got to figure out a way in which to make humanity first resonate with the majority and not the minority.
Are you hearing us, Andres?
I'm hearing you very faintly. I hear the other speaker very faintly, but I did hear what she said. Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry about that. I was just basically saying that I totally agree with you that humanity has got to come first, and that we've gotten so fractured in our thinking. It's black and white, and the shades of gray have absolutely gone away. And, you know, it's every single issue. When you talk about climate change, this affects every human being on the planet. And to me, it's not a political issue at all. But most people see it as that. So what I was saying is, until we can get these people to understand that humanity comes first, it feels like nothing is ever going to come of it.
Drying up river or glaciers melting doesn't have a D or an R attached to it. True. It affects everyone. You know, when we fish and we have the food that we eat that contaminated in the rivers right here in Brevard, it doesn't have a D or an I or an R or, you know, or NPA attached to it. It affects everybody. So we just want to tell our listeners who we're speaking with, Andres Usashi. I say your name perfect now, who is an award-winning Colombian-American writer, a film director, graphic artist, a singer-songwriter, and an activist like so many of us. And you're also a university professor, and you teach professional screenwriting in L.A. Andres, before we go further, tell all our audience what exactly a script doctor does.
Script doctor basically works to enhance somebody else's screenplay. It's sort of a consultant kind of job. Yeah.
So if
being
our good
a screenwriter for hire, yeah.
Well, so if our friend Mark wants to get in touch with somebody in L.A., he just wrote this really nice book called Only in Florida, Mosquito Lagoon by Mark Lyons, and it just became available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all over the place. It's an interesting read. We'll have to see if he can get somebody there to take a look at his book. But so let's go back to what we're talking about. So you started by being an activist, and we all heard your first song. Where did you get the inspiration for this new song?
Because it's hard to speak of a single song in vacuum, but I did start with Marching Into the Light because of undocumented workers and how I felt they were being mistreated, even though they were picking our crops and they were, you know, cleaning our houses, and oftentimes, you know, and they had fled from a lot of violence. And through that process, I met the Dreamers, and then I met the song Dream to Belong, because they were, you know, fighting. They had only grown in this country. They were educated in this country. They just wanted to give back. They wanted to, you know, study, pay taxes, everything, instead of being deported. And then when I guess this new song came from the Muslim ban and everything that I felt was going wrong, and just hearing the current occupant of the White House, you know, talking about all Mexicans as being, you know, rapists and whatnot, and just spewing hate, and I was so angry because I've known throughout, you know, my travels so many people from all around the world, and I've seen why people are fleeing their countries, not only Central America, but like I said, the Middle East and all of that. And I noticed that we were closing our doors, and sometimes even people that, you know, translators, you know, that helped the U.S. Army were being denied visas. People who are, you know, like artists, and they were, they had been offered a chance to speak or perform here, and just because of their ethnicity, they were being kept away from the country. That just, it feels like it's completely against the reason that has made this country so great, and is that it, from the beginning, it embraced diversity, and that's what sort of propelled us into an amazing, beautiful country where we all can, you know, work together for something great. And so I believe that it is up to us to keep that flame burning, the flame of the, on top of the Statue of Liberty. That's what the song says. I still believe in the flame you keep. I won't let go if you hold on to me. I still believe when I needed shelter, you took me in with open arms. And that song actually says a lot of lines that come from the Bible. I was a stranger, but found favor in your eyes, and things that I sometimes I hear my conservative, you know, people that I know that are conservative and that are, you know, professing the Bible all the time, and they're not living up to the example of Jesus. What would Jesus do in this case? What did Jesus do throughout the Bible? What's the main message of the Bible about, you know, strangers and immigrants, you know? And
he was an immigrant himself, if you think about it. He was living, he was born in a manger, and now I guess today they would have thrown him out of the manger. I don't know. I hope not. I would take him in.
And Exodus, and it basically the main thrust of the Bible, and how he says that, you know, people will be judged in the afterlife is by how they treated you know, those who, the stranger who came seeking refuge. And that's one of the great themes of the Bible, and it's not just the Bible. I'm thinking of all the religions, and that
yeah, we have similar stories. We have a similar story in Hinduism with Lord Krishna, when someone tried to kill him and he had to be hidden. You know, so it's the same thing. But Andres, I want to ask you, one of the questions that one of my listeners sent to me this morning was to ask you, do you think the immigrants of today are different from the immigrants of 100 years ago?
Well, they're different in that.
In skin color, maybe.
They're different in this sense. They're different in that the wars that are being waged now, maybe, you know, the kinds of weapons that they're fleeing from, that now they have to flee. Think, for example, the climate change has caused migration as well, waves of migration, because of, you know, how it's affecting the world and the world economy and farming. Those are different things. But what is the same is that they were human then and we're human now. And until we realize that we are a social species whose survival depends on our binds, on what binds us together and our bonds, we're going to perish. If we don't realize that this one planet is the only one we have, you know, what's going to happen in the future? So basically what I'm saying is, you know, we're better off, all of us, if we're working together than if we're attacking each other by the color of our skin, and that we have to take care of the planet. And that's basically what I'm doing, putting out songs and making videos and filming and interviews. And everybody who's hearing this can become part of a group, like, you know, whatever cause that you support. There are local chapters. There's Moms Clean Air Force. There's a Moms Demand and Givers Courage Against Gun Violence. There's
lots of environmental justice groups. So we have 2 minutes left, and I want you to give our listening audience here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends the links to all the your YouTube channel and how they can get a hold of you. Are you still doing public speaking and stuff like that?
Yes, I do public speaking, and I do a lot of concerts.
Yes, so give us the links to all of that.
Well, I guess the main one, which I sent you, is just I'm really easy to find on Google, but if, you know, if somebody doesn't know how my name is spelled, the best way is, I'm sure that you'll post it. But I wanted to also point people to All on the Line, which is dealing with gerrymandering, and that affects everything because the people that represent us should represent the actual population of each district, and that's been manipulated. There's March for Our Lives, which I think is very important. Raíces Texas is doing a great job. And then if you look for Andrés Useche, on Facebook, facebook.com/AndrésUsecheActivism, and that's a page where you can find a lot of what I have to say, and you'll find the new song. But this new song that you just heard, there's a video where we have footage from all over the world. I've been working with the UN and refugees from around the world on this big project. So that video is going to come out, and hopefully you'll be able to see it on there, and also my channel, Andrés Useche.
Well, I thank you for being an activist. I thank you for empowering all of us and motivating us to stop spreading hate and fear, and to look at people as our equal. And, you know, we all talk about all the major religions in the world, but they all actually promote peace and unity and prosperity for all. And, you know, you touched on something, and I'm going to take a quick minute off of my commercials to just say this to our audience. You know, people talk about Islam and Hinduism and Christianity, Buddhism, Judaism, whatever it is. But in Saudi Arabia, the Saudis are making a mint off of selling oil to the United States, and they're Muslims. So when people hear tidbits and they hear, you know, the news, and they go out and they hate Muslims and they hate people because of the way they dress or how they look, they're not actually hating the people that they should be hating, who are promoting hate from Saudi Arabia and all over the place. And so it's kind of like you have to really pay attention that the common man on the street might hate a Muslim, but our country is still doing business with the greatest Muslim power in the world because of oil. And so it's unfair to attack a Muslim in the United States. Don't let them come in to get a master's or a PhD because of the Muslim ban or whatever. But at the same time, you're doing business with people who are making millions off of selling American-made weapons to them. And that, to me, is the hypocrisy of our world, Andrés.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
And so, well, Ellen, I think you take it from here, because Paul would like to go to commercial.
Yes, thank you so much for calling in today. We've posted all of the information on our Facebook page, CETA Media Inc., and so just go to Facebook and you'll see that on there. Of course, you can download this show on our CETA Media website, www.cetamedia.com. And we're going to just take a quick station break to listen to our sponsors, and we'll be right back with Viewpoint.
Thank you, Andrés. I'll catch up with you on Facebook.
Right. Portions of Viewpoint with CETA right. and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of CETA McGee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply CETA Skincare, and these great sponsors. Portions of CETA and Friends is brought to you by Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture Store inside the Merritt Square Mall at the Sears Wing. Save big on furniture working with a flexible family-owned store with all the brands you love, from Ashley, Serta, Coaster, Enso, and more. Brand new, warranties as well, and delivery and haulaway available at a fraction of the cost of most stores, and delivered in 7 to 10 days. Free, no-credit checking and financing, and free interior design. The owner, Scott Palmer, has been in the mattress and furniture business for over 30 years, and Cloud 9 has been serving Central Florida for 7 years now. Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture Store, available at 321-459-2473. Again, call them 321-459-2473 or visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 8 locations serving Brevard County. So if you have an emergency, need a physical, or when your doctor is unavailable, with 8 locations, MedFast offers top quality care that is close by and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MEDFAST, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. MEDFAST Urgent Care opens 7 days a week with the convenience of 8 locations serving Brevard County. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MEDFAST. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral, and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With 3 locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here on AM 1510 on WWBC. That's a very nice dial. I like WWBC. It's cute. And we're on FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. That was a really great first half hour we had with Andres Osechi, Ellen. Yes. I always like when he calls in.
He's so powerful. And if you look at his YouTube
humble.
Channel. Yeah. He's got a great YouTube channel. He's got the blogs that he puts out are really good as well. So people really need to connect with him because he's got a fantastic just an ideas about different things. And they're just different perspectives. It's great.
And you know what? It makes me feel like, sometimes I don't think activists and volunteers of any organization gets enough credit. And he is so proud to say, in addition to everything he does, he is an activist. And I think, Susan, you could identify with that, right? What is an activist, right? But before we go to Mark Lyons, and I know Mark's just raring to go to chat about his books, and he looks so relaxed in the studio with us, I just wanted to tell our listeners that I read something this morning on Facebook. I read a lot. God, I think I read 5 hours a day. And it says, dancing can reverse the signs of aging in the brain. I was like, what? No wonder people all over the world, music and food are the two things that connects everybody.
So how do you suppose you determine that?
Get closer to the mic, Mark. I don't know. I guess they think if you dance, maybe you feel good. You release some really good hormones into your system. We'll have to talk
endorphins.
About that. And yeah, we'll have to talk about that one day, Susan.
Okay.
So Mark Lyons is here. And for my audience who are listening, who knows me very well, everyone knows I am a nurse. And Mark was my unit manager at one of the places that I worked here in Brevard County, Florida. Not only was he a good boss, very respectful human being as well. So thank you for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
Yes. And I had no idea back then that you were such a fabulous author. I did know you had a daughter, and I did know you went fishing, and I did know you loved the outdoors. But your book, Only in Florida, Mosquito Lagoon, we are all curious about this book and your inspiration for writing this book and where you came up with your characters and how long it took to write a book. So tell our listeners a little bit about yourself before we start chatting about your book.
Well, like you said, I'm a nurse. I have been for 45 years. And your time and my time came together for about 5 years. And we got to know each other pretty well. And I always respected your political views. God knows you had them.
Yeah. I know. I'm the kind of person that would be on an airplane and I would be able to strike up a conversation with a passenger and chat the entire way to Trinidad and Tobago about something about child raising. Or why people should have kids. And I always got off the plane and said, wow, I learned so much. So, I mean, it's good. I learned from you, too. I didn't care a lot about farming, but I heard you talk so much about the farm. So tell us a little bit about where you grew up.
Yeah, I grew up in Wisconsin. And as a kid, my grandfather had a dairy farm. So I worked that all summers and all vacations. And you know, started driving tractor when I was 8 years old. I suppose if you did that now, they'd probably lock you up.
Yeah.
If you let your kid do that now. But in fact, my uncle couldn't even go on a honeymoon until I was old enough to do the milking. That was age 13.
But you loved the farm. You always
I did when I was younger, until I found out the girls didn't like the smell of cow manure on your shirt.
Yeah. When you say the word Wisconsin, the only thing that comes to my mind when you say Wisconsin is Hillary Clinton did not go to Wisconsin. You know, that was on the news
much.
I know. I'm like, really?
Probably wouldn't have been a bad stop for her, all things considered.
So you're, in addition to being a nurse, you love boating on the Indian River Lagoon.
Yes.
You love to walk, Mark.
I do. I do it more than I love to do it, but it just seems like a necessary thing. And I'm keeping track. I do about 1,000 miles a year, and my goal is to do 25,000 before I die.
So where do you find time to walk in addition to still working?
Well, it's only 2 hours at a time. I work 12-hour shifts, and I do work full-time, but that's only 3 days a week. So it's not too bad. I've got some time.
So both Mark and I went back to work even though we want to quit. Now, I went back to work for the health insurance, which is another show and another time. So Mark, you wrote the book, but, I mean, where do you get your inspiration for writing?
Well, I've always had a lot of stories to tell. This particular one kind of, you know, I had some ideas sloshing around in my head. But a friend of mine had a problem, and she had to go and see the county health department. And that plays a pretty significant role in this book. She was scratched by a bat in her apartment and had to have the rabies vaccine. And it wasn't really a vaccine, it's a treatment. It's really a treatment for it. And subsequently, I started thinking about this, and I kind of interfaced it with a number of other things that I had going on in my head, some other plans I had for other novels, and it kind of came out that way.
Yeah, I mean, the plot, the way you twist, the twists and turns of the book, I don't think anybody would have put together that it all started from rabies. I mean, but you did.
Oh, it did. It absolutely did. I mean, that is the whole point. Without giving away too much, the disease is really a big part of it.
Yeah, we don't want to spoil it for everybody.
That's difficult to do, talking about the elements of the book without kind of giving it up.
Right. But the thing is, when you write a book, there's always somebody, a character that comes to mind. where do you find your characters? Like, how do you build them up?
Well, there are a couple of characters in minor roles in the book that are actually from my life, but most of them are essentially made up. The main character, his name is Mike Lyman. He is really me. And I say that in a kind of an odd way, because I always consider myself to be the beta version of him. He's kind of my fantasy existence.
And I see, and I love your cover. Who did your cover for you?
Tammy Bruce.
Oh, that's our friend, Tammy.
An old friend, yes. Your friend, too.
Yes, and I like Tammy.
Yes, she's quite the photographer, and that's one of her photographs. And I liked it, and it seemed to fit the occasion. It's a little on the dark side, but after all, we are talking about murder here.
Right, and you know, most people, when they write a book and their friends put their names in it, they do feel special. And I'm glad you did that.
Yeah, well, she needed the credit for the photograph. I didn't have a better one, so that's the one I chose.
I love it. It looks like something is coming out of the lagoon to grab you for my listeners who are tuning into Viewpoint with Sita and friends today. You have to go. Ellen, where can they find this book?
Amazon, right?
Yeah, Amazon.com, Barnes and Noble.com, eBooks, all of the online places have it.
So does writing energize or exhaust you?
Well, a little of both. It depends, you know, from time to time, a little of both. The ideas energize me, and they kind of take over your mind sometimes. You know, you have to decide where you're going to go with them and whether you made the right decisions, if you're going in the right directions.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's all over, you sleep pretty well.
And I think to be a writer, you have to have a lot of emotions, right?
Oh, no question.
So do you feel like someone could be a writer if they didn't have strong emotions?
Hard to imagine.
You have to have a story to tell.
Hard to imagine. You have to have some passion for what you're doing.
Yeah, you have to like it.
Right.
You have
Absolutely.
To want to tell that story, Absolutely. Right? So where is your quiet time? Where do you find that time to write? Is it like in the middle of the night, or you're just driving and you jot something down? Or write on your hand and then you can't find it? Where do you get these ideas?
I don't write on my hand, Sita.
I've written something on my hand and then I wash my hands.
They make these little packs of paper with glue on them. And, you know, you can write anything you want on them and put them anywhere you want.
Sticky notes.
Right, and you can still wash your hands. You know, nurses have to wash their hands a lot.
Yes.
You were told that, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
A couple days ago, someone gave me a website for something and I wrote it on my hand right here. And then at the end of the day, I went looking for it. I'm like, oops, I should have had a sticky note in my pocket.
See?
Yeah. So where are you marketing the book and how are you marketing the book?
Well, I'm not marketing it very well. You know.
Ellen, we've had this discussion with so many authors.
Yeah, exactly.
I've always seen the publisher as being the person that, or the company that you do the marketing. But I've learned since then that that's not really the case. It's really a collaborative effort. One of the things that came up this summer, I was the featured author, and this was a featured book on a Friday on Your Next Beach Read. And this seemed like the perfect choice for that kind of a website. You know, it is a beach read. This isn't Dostoevsky or Kafka.
Yeah.
You know, this
is... But people
is,
want that, though. In the summertime, you want something light.
Right, it is. It's something you can read and then look up to make sure the sharks aren't eating your children and then go back and you won't be lost.
So what's in store for you? How many published and unpublished books do you have right now?
Well, this is the only one published. I have one that I'm marketing right now to publishers, and I have a third one that's finished. But I'm still doing revisions. I still get ideas. You know, if this hadn't been published, I would change this one too. And the second one,
But you got to stop at some point.
I know. When is that? Let me know when you figure that out.
I don't think you ever get to that point. No, I mean, no. Most people who write afterwards, they'll get, you know, people who criticize the book or people who want to add to it. But at some point, you have to say, stop, I'm publishing it the way it is.
That's exactly right. You just have to call an end to it.
Yeah.
It goes on forever.
Yeah, because if you ask five people their opinions, whether it's running for office or writing a book, they'll give you five different opinions.
I just put a picture on my Facebook page. It was about it showed a guy with hair down to his waist and a very long beard. The caption was, "This is me in the year 2085 still revising my book."
Yeah.
You know.
Sounds like my son and the beard. We won't go there, though.
No, we better not.
Yeah. So do you find writing, it's sort of like a spiritual thing?
Well, like it raises my spirits. You know, it kind of puts me in in kind of more of a global frame of mind, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I look at things from multiple perspectives after I do it. And, well, while I'm doing it as well. I try not to offend anyone, although it does happen from time to time, usually individuals.
And so when you write, there has to be certain people in your life that has inspired you and motivated you, and I think your sister was such a person.
Well, absolutely, absolutely. I sent her an early draft of this book, and she's a college professor. She's got a PhD and two masters, and, you know, she's kind of up there.
Yeah, and, she's kind of, he motions she's kind of up there.
So she looked at it, and she said, you know, I never laughed so much in my life. And I said, Jill, this is a murder mystery, really? You know.
Well, if she laughed about it, we probably would like it as well.
Yeah, so, well, there is some humor. There is some humor in all of these books. And I kind of, you know, it seems a little distasteful in a way to talk about murder and humor in the same kind of setting.
Yeah, yeah.
But I kind of look at it like the spicy chili I make. You know, I put all of these things in to get
like
just the right flavor.
Like a salad.
Yeah, but by then it's too hot to eat. So yeah. You have to add a little sugar so you can kind of get it down.
Gee,
you know?
Now I'm going to have to read the book as soon as I get home.
Just add a little sugar and you can, a lot easier to swallow.
So for our friends who are tuning in, we're speaking with Mark Lyons. He is a nurse and he's an author. He's published his first book. It's called Only in Florida. Only in Florida, and what's the other part of it?
Mosquito Lagoon.
Mosquito Lagoon. My God, when you had to put your glasses on. Mosquito Lagoon. But so, Mark, what did you have to edit out of the book? Was there something in there that your sister said you have to take it out or else?
No. We don't have that kind of relationship. No. I just, you know, if she says she laughed at it, well, that's good enough for me. She doesn't have much of a sense of humor, really. So if I can get her to chuckle, I think I'm, you know, my whole motive here is to entertain.
Right.
I mean, these are fiction books. There's, you know.
So some people use books to write and hide a secret. Do you feel like you had any secrets to hide that you wrote in your book?
Well, I think I've exposed a few of them.
I see. Susan, I see you're listening. I think it sounds like a fascinating book, doesn't it?
It does. I want to read it.
Well, my ex-girlfriend, who I was with for 6 years, said, you were married twice? She didn't know.
Oh, well. Secret's out now.
Well, that's what I said.
I know.
So what was your hardest scene to write? Did you conjure up anybody's image in your head when you were writing a difficult scene?
Yeah, a couple of them. I've been called for jury duty 5 different times. Well, the next one comes
up. Did you
up
see Judge
November.
Majeed, and did he give you that speech?
No.
About
no.
immigration?
No, he didn't. I've had every other one, though.
Yeah.
But anyway, there was a situation where I was in voir dire, and it was a civil trial where a physician and a hospital were being sued because a patient died under unusual circumstances. And in voir dire, they kept coming back to me. They kept circling back and asking me these questions about medical protocols and things like that. And it wasn't clear to me what was going on immediately, but they kept coming back and coming back, you know, way more than anyone else. And it was like they were writing down everything I was saying. They were trying to get this. And then they'd come back and say, well, you spoke about this and that, you know, wanting me
to
elaborate
to
even more
yeah.
on these issues that they found. And I was really puzzled as to why that
yeah.
was. And then, of course, I was dismissed from the jury. I was not impaneled. And all the way home, I was thinking about it. Excuse me. And it seemed like they were just trying to set everything in the minds of the jurors that would be impaneled, the very basis for what they were going to be making their decisions on. And that part came through in this book. You know, it's absolutely real, almost verbatim.
Well, that's almost like what they say, you learn something new every day. So you kind of looked at that situation in a positive way. You took something home from it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
When I left that courtroom after I was dismissed.
You could have written a whole book right there about each of them.
Almost. The physician yeah. looked up to me and she mouthed the words, thank you. And I was puzzled. What did I do to, you know, why would she be so? It didn't quite wash. But on the way home, it kind of came to me. Ah, okay. And then I saw that the plaintiff sadly got no money. They lost.
Yeah. So where did you find the name? How did you come up with the name Only in Florida, Mosquito Lagoon? Like there's a lot of stuff that happens and we say Only in Florida.
Well,
right?
Well, absolutely. Right, but this isn't you know, this isn't your alligator in the swimming pool.
I was just
going
to say,
you know?
you're not writing about the alligator that comes to the front door.
This is something that probably could only happen in Florida, but it's not the kind of things that, you know, the man in Florida who, you know, did this or did this, some odd thing. This just happens to be here, and it happens to be in Central Florida. And Mosquito Lagoon is because a lot of the action takes place right in our own beloved Mosquito Lagoon.
Yeah, and we're having so much discussion right now about the lagoon, I think.
Absolutely.
So did you write about the lagoon in a positive light or a negative light?
Well, it just kind of happened to be there. And
yeah.
The things that happened there were not all that positive.
So for our listeners, the base setting for this book is actually Harbor City right here in Melbourne, Florida.
Yes.
And your main character, Natalie Bruce, is 100% fiction. How do you tell people when to say, well, I think I could be that person? Do you have anybody that comes up to you and says, was it me?
No, I don't think so, because of the name is, the last name is someone who's a friend of mine. She may have thought initially that it might have been her.
I kind of thought so, too.
But it was not. No, I just liked her name, and I just chose it for that reason.
Yeah, so how can a nurse working in a rehab center get involved in a criminal plot that could affect thousands of lives? That's your main character, your main character.
If you have time, I can give you a small reading and kind of give you a...
Do we have time? Maybe a minute?
A minute?
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to do it.
Well,
but I'll have to tell you then.
Yeah. We have two minutes, actually.
Essentially, what happened was a woman died in a rehab center, much like one that you and I worked in.
Right.
She was found on the floor, but there were some strange things going on. A man accompanied her on her admission, and it turned out that he really wasn't the husband he portrayed himself to be. It also turned out that she had rabies, which is very, very uncommon in this world, not in this world, but in this country. There are only one or two cases of rabies, active rabies, in this country in a year. Worldwide, 50,000, but here, only a couple. From there, it turned out that he was considered a suspect because he had to make a trip back to the facility during the night to get the keys out of the med cart. You're familiar with that scenario
where the nurse locks the keys in
the med cart, then the on-call nurse has to come out and get it. So he was on site at about the time that she was murdered.
Yes.
That made him a suspect, got him suspended from his job, and got him embroiled in this whole case.
Okay. I know of male nurses that could happen too.
Seriously.
Yeah.
I gotta get some names.
Yeah, so your writing is improving with each book that you write,
absolutely. I do think so.
And what's in the works for us? What can the fans who are going to be buying your book and falling in love with your style of writing, what other books are in store for them?
Well, the second one is only in Florida. It's called He Who Brings Death. And one of the title characters is L.K. Trilamuerte, He Who Brings Death. And it's kind of a romp in a way. It's fast-moving, fast-changing, much like this book. But a little more polished.
Yeah, and you in one of your books you're talking about a character named Dr. P. I kind of know who that is.
You know Dr. P.
Yeah,
do you?
Yeah, I know it. Yeah, okay. I think I you know what, that would be an interesting book.
Well, you know, the basis for this character really was Dr. P. But it starts out because of what Natalie describes as a man crush, because he is such a great person, a humanitarian, and does all of these things like the Dr. P. we know.
Yes.
But it turns out the good doctor has a little bit of a dark side.
Oh, nice. That sounds interesting. Now, you and I have seen, so many things that have happened in nursing. We see people, the best and the brightest, rich and poor, poor, middle class, wealthy. We can probably write a book about Medicare, Medicaid, waste, fraud, abuse. Are you going to be writing anything along those lines later on? Because, I mean, I would think a novel about what we see, the families. I mean, how many of them have to lie, cheat, scheme to get their loved ones on Medicaid? We've seen a lot of that.
Oh, sure. I don't really go particularly for those types of issues, but the families, the patients, high on my list.
Yeah, you could write about some
Absolutely.
Of their family members.
Right. I don't really get into...
The politics of it.
The politics or the financial aspects of it. But the families is always where, you know, I've been concerned. As nurses, that's who we take care of, the families and the patients, you know. Somebody else takes care of the finances. I mean, we can, you know.
You can do a whole book about.
You can kick the dirt and shake your head and all that stuff, yeah. But it still comes down to taking care of the people.
Well, you know, you could write a whole book about immigration and immigrants when you think about a nursing home. I remember once, I'm not going to say the name, but we had a patient that you and I had to attend to one morning because they said he didn't sleep all night and he was kicking and screaming and being aggressive. And we got in and the gentleman was from Virginia and we had a Haitian nurse's aide, a Jamaican, and somebody, I think, from Peru or someplace. And he thought he was in a different country because they were all speaking Spanish in the middle of the night, changing his diapers. And I remember when we went in, they said, oh, call the doctor. We need to get him on a shot of Ativan or something to calm him down because he thinks he's in a different country. And the patient actually said, nurse, they were here last night. I was not in the United States. They took me someplace else. And, you know, you could write a whole book about just that scene.
Oh, absolutely. And in my other books, there are a lot of things that are similar to that. Little misunderstandings that come up, people that get, you know, slightly diluted ideas because of things that they see and they don't know. They have a difficult time separating reality from fiction.
Really. Right. So. Or, you know, we've had patients who, multimillionaires who were watching their weight all their lives and then they end up with a colostomy. Right. And they bring this disaster to us, the nurses, because of the way their lifestyle was. And no amount of money in the world can save them now, because now you got to give up the house in the river, give up the Mercedes-Benz, get into one of those beds, and now you're at the mercy of foreigners, strangers, to change your colostomy bag. That's a story about eating.
Well, old age is a great equalizer.
It is. I think, Ellen and Suzanne, for people like us who work in the nursing homes, we do see the end of life, and we see so much more than everybody else. You know, we can talk about wars and public education and environment and saving everything, but we actually see when people take their last breath. And Mark was always instrumental with us, all of us nurses, in providing care with dignity and respect and making sure everybody left our planet without pain and they were comfortable to the end. So thank you for that, Mark. I know you could write a book about some of the people you think is coming to your brain right there.
Oh, yeah. There are a lot. There are a lot.
So give us the website one more time, or where can people find a book? And the name of the book, again, is Only in Florida, Mosquito Lagoon.
Yeah, I don't have a website, but, you know, you can find it on any of the online services.
Technically, you do have a website, because Amazon gives you a free website. If they look up your name, they're going to find one. So when you go home today, make sure that that's all filled out the way you want it.
Or if not, Ellen Little makes websites as well. She does, and she does a terrific, if she can squeeze it in. Fabulous, Ellen. Thank you.
So we
want to thank Suzanne and Mark for coming in.
Yes.
Oh, anything else you want to tell our listeners before you leave?
No, I don't think so. I think we've done just fine.
You can come back anytime you want.
Appreciate it, Sita.
Take it away, Elle.
We'd like to also thank Andre Sucessi for being online with us today and calling in from LA. We've got all of his stuff posted on our Sita Media Facebook page, so please be sure to check into that. All of our past shows have been posted, so you'll be able to see those. And of course, today's show will be posted this week. But thank you so much for joining us on another edition of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We'll see you next week.
This is the Christian Voice of Brevard on WWBC 1510 AM.